Fix 4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT.org, Twitter.com/KPFT, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and salutations. Perhaps you've heard of people who hustle cars, or maybe those that hustle pool, but now it's time for those guys that hustle technology. It's Technology Bites, the technology hustlers.
Good evening, tech gazers. Tech geezers.
Dear hustlers, I never thought I would be writing to you about this. My computer.
I always thought these stories were pure fantasy until I myself was infected with spyware. Oh, the things we'll see. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
All right. Well, the perfect show.
Uh-huh. Give it about 30 seconds.
It's all downhill. All right, turn that down. Stop that. Make no noises. All right, well, we're glad you could tune in tonight. It's I hope everybody survived the 4th of July. We had a good turnout at the Geek Gathering, so thanks to those that showed up for that. And
Fireworks went off kind of late.
Yeah, did you stick around and watch them?
I did.
Was it worth seeing? Could you see them at all?
You could see them mostly, maybe about 75%, but they were cut off at the bottom.
Yeah.
So, and they were a little further away than I thought they were going to be. So, but they were okay.
Yeah. Well, once it started raining and it was already a half hour late, I left. So, but glad to have those of you that came out and hung out with us. And it was an interesting, there was plenty of parking. So we had that going for us.
Because everyone was parked on 45 and I-10.
I took off a little after Jay did,
and luckily I was on two wheels. But, I mean, people, I can maybe cut some people some slack for pulling over on the shoulder. That's fine. But when you start double parking on 45, and there's, like, three rows on each side, and there's, like, one lane barely getting through, that may be a bit excessive, fireworks or no.
I saw a lot of people on the spur overpass parked on the side of the road. And it was, I was going against it, so I didn't have, there wasn't anybody stopped in my lane, so it was good. So I went up the 59 spur and out that way. All right, so you can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us on IRC. IRC.cuckoo.com is the server that we hang out on. The channel is Tech Bytes. If you have your own IRC client, just dial in IRC.cuckoo, C-U-C-K-O-O.com. Or you can go to geekradio.com and use our Java chat client to join in the channel. So we have all of those options for you. A little bit later on, we're going to be taking calls on the air, talking to you about computers and stargazing and so forth at 713-526-5738. So if you want to be on the air with us, you can call, talk to Groovehouse. He will guide you through the process to get you queued up and
maybe
ready to go.
Maybe I will.
I don't know, is Groovehouse feeling ornery tonight?
No, this software is.
Soft, not working.
No. There, maybe.
All right.
Only there was some place we could call and get help with the software.
I think it's working.
The perfect show. 713-526-5738. If you want to find out if it's working, call that number real quick, and maybe you'll talk to Groovehouse, and maybe you'll get in the queue to be on the air.
Maybe. Maybe. The software will work.
Who knows? There's if one thing isn't broken, it's another. That's why we like doing this show, because...
I wonder how the internet will be tonight.
So far, so good, but thanks for mentioning that. I'm sure it will go up and down like it likes to go up and down. Okay, so that's all the real... So we got DEF CON coming up, right? That's coming up in a couple
weeks.
Weeks,
it's yeah.
August the...
1 month out.
7th through the... Or 8th through the 11th.
Okay, so 1 month out.
Okay.
And then... Like, do we talk about other things being out?
Oh.
Generally, is that policy not to, or... We can...
Yeah.
Okay. Other people are going to be out. Far away.
Well, I'm going to go to Iceland, and so we're going to have...
Trolls!
We're going to have... During the first 2 weeks of August, when I'm out of the country, and when these guys are out of the state, Groovehouse will be holding down the fort.
Playing the best of. I'll be here to push the button on the best of technology.
Depending
bytes.
On whether or not the software works. No, we're going to have Lee Hutchins and Dwight Silverman in the studio for both of those shows.
Don't forget Pete.
Is Pete coming to Houston?
I don't know, but at least we can get him on.
Usually do when, get, when he can at least call in. Situation.
Well, so we'll have Pete, Lee, and Dwight in the studio with Groovehouse.
I don't think I'll take a vacation, too.
Will you? Who will run the board? What do we do without you?
We'll just run it on its own.
Note to self, do not anger Groovehouse between now and the end of August.
Hey, buddy. How
are
you doing?
I can run the board, but it would be more fun to have Lee and Dwight do it under my instruction. No, don't push that.
Space madness.
The candy-colored button.
Well, there's plenty of red buttons for him to push, and I'm sure that guiding those two... I'm sure that Lee Hutchins from Ars Technica would have as much success running the board as he did flying his first quadcopter. If you read his review, he got a $2,000 Phantom whatever quadcopter.
As his very first?
Well, he got one as a review unit.
Ah.
From the company that makes them, and he was going to review it, and he promptly flew it into a tree and destroyed it. And then they sent him another one.
He flew that one in.
But then he got the third one, and that's the review you got.
We need to save something for when he's here.
Well, just be sure
you can
bring that up when he's on the air. Topic. I'm just giving you ammunition ahead of time. So
tell him not to fly this show into a tree.
Well, I was thinking that's what he would do if he was at the control board. So they got that stuff to look forward to, and be a different kind of show altogether. All right, so again, if you want to be on the air, we will be doing a few things first, but then we'll go to the phones at 713-526-5738 and talk to you about your computer stuff, technology stuff, your flying quadcopters into a tree stuff. All right, so we're going to go out to San Antonio, do the Technology Bytes info shot via the Skypes. So cross your fingers, and here we go.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So looking ahead, you know, at the, you know, what's the market for PCs and so that, and that kind of stuff. Well, now we're kind of enough through 2014 that, some of the companies are starting to release that stuff. And Gartner has released their projections for 2014 and 2015 computer sales. They're indicating that PC shipments would see a small loss from the previous year for 2014 before seeing an uptick in 2015. Their idea is that the increase in shipments next year of computers will come after a trend of declining sales as consumers shift buying habits and hold on to their PCs longer. And they get answers from shows like ours so they can keep their computers running well enough. We don't measure on that. As a result, the number of tablets shipped in 2015, though, are expected to surpass PCs for the first time. So that's a big change. Gartner suggests that PC shipments will see a contraction of 2.9% contraction of 2.9% in 2013. I think they mean 2014 there, that they'll see a contraction of 2.9% this year before rising about 2.6% next year. Previous years saw a decline in shipments of 9.5%, according to numbers based on desktops, notebooks, and premium ultra mobiles. The growth in 2015 will be because of increased numbers of shipments of premium ultra-mobile machines. In other words, MacBook Airs from Windows and others and Mac Airs. Figures for the relative slowdown are attributed to the migration of users from Windows XP to newer versions of Windows, resulting in a large number of machines needing replacement. Gartner Research Director Ranjit Atwal says that the replacement of machines in Western Europe helped stave off the decline, adding that around 60 million PCs are going to be replaced in professional markets. That's getting rid of XP stuff. Even with the decline lessened overall, Gartner says the traditional PC, desktops, and notebooks market will continue to decline. The research company expects desktops and notebooks shipments are going to decrease by 6.7% in 2014 and 5.3% in 2015. So it's a change. You know, people are going to tablets. People are using their phones and stuff instead. And so they don't need – the other big piece is, of course, that now everybody's computers are lasting longer. It's something that, you know, in a sense, what I'm seeing is the PC market seems to be getting to be a lot more like Apple's market. And the way Apple's stuff has behaved as opposed to the kind of consumer-oriented – your consumer – well, not that consumer-oriented isn't the right word. But Apple's the way that Apple has behaved where their stuff costs a little bit more and lasts longer has kind of come to the PC world, at least on the lasting longer part. And, you know, looking towards the future, there's an article about IBM – they're worried that the age of silicon may be drawing to a close Wired Magazine or Wired.com, it says. So they're going to spend – IBM is going to spend $3 billion over the next 5 years to try and find new ways to power future generations of microprocessors. Today's state-of-the-art IBM chips use silicon components that are already tiny, just 22 nanometers in width. But looking about 5 years into the future – parts become so small that it becomes extremely difficult to maintain a reliable on or off state. Tom Rosamilia, senior vice president of IBM Systems and Technology Group, says, as we get into the 7-nanometer time frame, things really begin to taper off. Yeah. So the first step will fund research into ways of making smaller chip components work, even if they don't use silicon. IBM has high hopes for a silicon alternative called carbon nanotubes. That's got that whole nanotech thing going for it. But the concept still needs to work if it's going to become as easy to crank out carbon nanotube chips as their silicon alternatives. The other thing is IBM's investing in brand new ways of number crunching. They're looking at quantum computing or neurosynaptic chips. They use computing models that go beyond the digital computing paradigm that has dominated the tech industry for 50 years. The microprocessor industry has had an amazing ride, but already you can see some fraying at the edges of Moore's Law, which is the observation that chip performance doubles every 2 years or so. Microsoft is starting to use custom-designed chips for its Bing search engine. They say it may be better to get performance boosts this way rather than relying on general-purpose server chips to speed up. And scientists who maintain a list of the world's top supercomputers worry that today's supercomputers aren't becoming powerful at quite the same clip. So they're kind of out at the edge. And so some of this stuff shows up sooner. If you ask Intel, they'll say that Moore's Law is alive and well, and it expects to crank out faster and faster chips for the foreseeable future. Why do they have these two different opinions? Most likely it comes down to the different business models of Intel and IBM. Although both make their own microprocessors, Intel rules the high-volume desktop market. The server chips, Intel sells server chips too, but at higher volumes than IBM, where IBM is looking to have a profitable niche with very specific stuff. So they're kind of the F1 car of servers. And trying to they're trying to get ahead of everybody else, and they're willing to spend $3 billion to figure it out. So hopefully they'll find something interesting, because in the next 5 years we need some kind of cool new faster computer or something. In other news, a team of people from Texas won a robot challenge to detect landmines. Kind of, the cool part is obviously they didn't detect landmines like with their hands. They did it with robotics. The two of the worst things about landmines in 2014 is that A, they still exist, and B, there isn't a better way to get rid of them because they're all over the place. Mines range from low-tech explosive cans to high-tech innovative and indiscriminate killing machines. So far they still, use the same kind of approach, basically sticks. People suited up in minesweeping gear use handheld metal detectors and long thin prodders, which equals sticks, to find the mines, and then they destroy them with controlled explosions. At the end of June, a group of three students from the University of Texas won a competition at the 2014 International Conference on Robotics and Automation that focused on detecting and classifying landmines. The three electrical engineering academics programmed a robot to find landmines and then tested their code on a robot in an outdoor simulation. One of the benefits of using robots is obviously remote control. The humans aren't there, because if a robot hits the mine, screws up and hits the mine and boom, well, that's sort of funny if you didn't pay for the robot. A human does it, not funny. Texas team couldn't have been more removed from the minefield. The robot they were controlling was in Portugal, where their code led it to discover more simulation mines than any other teams. In a gigantic game of Minesweeper, teams were ranked based on how many mines they detected versus the number of mines they, quote, exploded accidentally in the process. So, kind of cool. It's a Texas story. It's a technology story. And, there's one where having robots replace humans in a job, I'm thinking landmine detection is a really great place to that would be a place where nobody is going to be bitching that their mine sweeping job, that they have to give up walking in minefields with a stick so that a robot can take their job. And in other more happy news, I guess, if you're a mine or whatever, Dell, things are sort of quieter. You don't get as much lead time because they don't have to impress their shareholders anymore. But Dell launched two new Android tablets today, built around Intel's new 64-bit Merrifield system on chips and dual-core Atom processor. Although the current version of Android is 32-bit, these tablets should be able to take advantage when Android L with 64-bit support gets out to the public. The 7-inch Venue model has a 1280 by 800 resolution screen and costs around $150. Excuse me. The Venue 8, which sports a full 1920 by 1200 display, can be had for – it's under $200. It's more like around $180. Dell is starting to try to be competitive in that Android market in and with a low price. I mean, that those are competitive prices, and once we see some tests of competitive performance, then they sound like they can kind of rival the Nexus from Google. And just don't get mistaken, the Venue 8 Android tablet is one thing. The Venue 8 Pro runs Windows and costs a lot more. So I didn't want to have anybody rushing out there and see the Venue 8 Pro and think that that's what I was talking about from this one. These are Android tablets. And finally, another kind of Android-y thing, Chromecast. This is with Chromecast. Soon you're going to be able to mirror everything on your Android phone over to your TV using a Chromecast. After announcing the feature at an event last month, Google said today that mirroring is beginning to roll out as part of an update to the Chromecast app for Android. The app will allow Android users to begin casting the entire screen of their tablets and phones rather than just individual Chrome tabs and supported apps, which is what they could do until now. Unfortunately, there are a limited number of devices that support mirroring at the moment, although that list does include the recent Nexus line, as well as some phones from Samsung, HTC, and LG. So if you've got a Comcast and you've got some other Android stuff, which presumably that would be why you would have a Chromecast, then that's about to get a little cooler for your $30 or whatever that you spent to buy your Chromecast. And I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the Technology Bytes news.
And, all right, I was just enjoying, if you do a Google search on Japanese Doctor Who parody, this is pretty brilliant. It's like Ultraman meets Doctor Who. All right, well, now that the news is over and Barrett is out of the studio fetching his power supply, he needed to, apparently he needed a juice for his laptop and had one delivered. Yeah, he called upon one of his minions to have... What?
Oh, I thought it was like delivered by quadcopter or something.
That'd have been even better, yeah. But no.
It was Barrett after all.
That crashed into a tree. And then dropped off his power supply. Look at that. So how did that happen?
The power gods.
So they were just nearby?
He has the power!
They brought it from the office. It's because I've, I don't know how many hours I've been coding and working in the last... 4 days, but I've slept less than probably like
so
eight.
So your team of support,
yeah, they have to.
Team of support gnomes have to bring you juice when
they
you
owe me that. Yeah,
juice box.
That's what it is. It's like his little sippy cup for power.
3,000 milliamps, please.
Injected directly into your brain. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, we are looking for some phone calls here to get us through the evening. We'd like to talk to you and answer your questions and discuss whatever's on your mind regarding technology. Otherwise, we can just read our Twitter feeds to you for tons of enjoyment. So you will be coming into town later, Peter?
Yes, I'm very, very likely, I would say about 90% likely that I will be there next week. Just because I have some business in Houston, and I always push to schedule. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, we need this in Houston, or we need you to go to Houston. It's like, hey, Wednesday works great for me.
Right.
Two birds with one stone. So I should be, unless something changes, I should be in town next Wednesday as well. And then I'll hold out the time to make sure I can when you're not there so that we can have easy shows.
Well, we want to keep the entertainment value high, regardless of the lack of
production. And we don't, Dwight's not doing the show regularly, and when we have him and a guest in the studio, we don't want the Skype to go down and have them just hanging, twisting in the wind like a badly piloted quadricopter.
That joke will be the joke that keeps on giving.
Flicted's leaving his iPad with us, right? His iMac?
His iPad?
His iMac? His iMac's going to stay here so we can... No?
iMac.
He's got a puzzled look. He's got a puzzled
what
look.
What are we going to do? It's a MacBook Air.
You're going to leave that here?
If Pete's here, it's fine.
He's shaking his head no.
Right.
He needs that so he can get hacked at DEF CON.
Oh.
And bring back fun viruses for everyone else.
Okay.
0 days. I buy laptops filled with them. It's like, you know, free 0 day exploits.
Nice. There was one story I forgot. I didn't find it or I didn't see it when I was, you know, in the run up to the show when I'm kind of putting the news together. But it was one that I had noted and had wanted to pick up. There was, you know, there's always the scenario in the movies about, you know, hackers taking over the electric grid or those kinds of things. And the thing about it is it was relatively difficult to do in the past and hadn't been done. But now there actually are exploits out in the wild, and you know, from looking at the source code and some of that stuff, they announced one after they fixed the hole that these people were using. Apparently it involved putting out a compromised version of the VPN software that the utilities were using to remote access their controls, and it, you know, basically opened it up where these people had the same control as the techs who work for, you know, electric utilities. And they said there were names on this list of utilities that were that could have been compromised with this or that had been compromised with this that you would recognize. So not a good sign. But they said when they looked at the source code that a good bit of the new code that was doing this new stuff, that their assumption was that it was a Russian speaker had done it, and they thought that it came from somewhere in Eastern Europe or Russia, and that it had spread all over. And it started out with spear phishing, and then they started, you know, then they got the software in, and they actually got pretty far where they could have done a lot of damage before it was discovered, and now supposedly is fixed because they announced it. They said they waited to announce that they had found this until they'd secured everybody that was affected. But that's real world hacker stuff, and if they ever start playing with it, it's ugly.
Yeah. Oh, well, I just had bad news or disappointing news. We're here in the studio doing our technology show, and guess who's playing over at Fitzgerald's tonight? Don't everybody leave to go see him.
Devo.
No. Polyphonic Spree.
Oh, at Fitzgerald's?
At Fitzgerald's.
Was this
tonight.
Unannounced?
I'm sure it was announced in many places, but not any of the places that I monitored.
Okay.
Thank God.
Uh-oh, work's calling.
I gotta go.
Oh, this power supply.
Don't.
Barrett's got doesn't work. I'll have to go back to the office and get one.
I left my choir robe.
Yeah. Don't forget your church robe.
All right. Well, the phones are still open, and we're accepting calls at 713-526-573.
Software.
Tell us about how great the Polyphonic Spree show is that you're going to go to is going to be.
Software is currently up.
Awesome.
Do 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 do. This has been the struggle here the last several weeks or months. Or
is there a soccer game on?
That was earlier. It went to kicks. It went to penalty kicks.
Yeah, it went
kicks.
To penalty kicks.
Netherlands versus.
However, the game yesterday's did not go to penalty kicks.
You know, I was a half hour late getting to the game, and I said, "Oh, isn't it a Germany game on tonight? Let me look that 5-0. What?" So, like, you know, I missed the best part of the whole game. Just by missing half hour of 90 minutes of play.
I wasn't actually watching it because I was in training, so I just had a page up that was updating, live updating. And I started it around 18 minutes, and I was like, wow, Germany already scored. It's 1-0. And then all of a sudden it's like, they scored again. It's 2-0. And then somebody else said, no, it's 3-0. And I was like, no, it's just 2-0. And they're like, no, it's 3-0. And then it popped up. I'm like, that was like a minute after the last one. No, it's 4-0. What? It was like 1 minute later.
Yeah.
Jeez.
They scored four goals in 6 minutes, I think. It was insane.
They scored five goals within 30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes into the game, it was already 5-0.
I didn't see this. I heard it was like bad, like the worst in 67
years.
I didn't know
it's the
bad.
Worst defeat by a hosting team in the history.
That's even in third. Brazilians are pretty good at football, you'd think, or soccer.
They were also really good at crime.
So did they all leave the field, or what happened? Like, was there just no one on the field at the time when they were doing all the scoring?
Germany came out, they said, oh, they're an hour late. Okay, we'll just kick the ball into the
Did Germany roll out with tanks? Did they have, like, the Luftwaffe behind them? What?
It was the Blitzkrieg bop. It was devastating.
Panzers are not allowed in football, I thought.
You know, it was the most entertaining soccer I've ever seen in my life, and I don't really like soccer all that much, but I kind of like it. But seeing a high score, you know, it wouldn't be fun if soccer scored that high all the time, I suppose. But in a game where people get really excited when someone almost scores a goal, to see them score five goals in 30 minutes is just incredibly entertaining.
Did you see the at the very end, like 89th, 90th minute, when Brazil finally did score one?
Yeah.
Man, that German goalie was mad.
He wanted a purpose.
He really wanted a shutout, I think.
All right. So, you know, we can talk soccer if you want to, if you're a Brazil fan or Germany fan. So it's going to be Germany versus
Argentina.
Argentina. Is that tomorrow?
No, it's, I think, so Brazil and Holland play for third place, I think, on Saturday. And then I think Sunday is Germany, Argentina.
So who's in running for one, Germany and Argentina?
Yep.
For the people that don't know.
Yep. Yeah.
Me. Okay.
Germany, Argentina are playing for first place. Brazil's playing against
against Holland.
Holland for third place.
That's rough. You know, you've got the descendants of the Nazis playing against Germany.
Yeah, that's actually I've made that comment a couple times already. I'm like, if you actually look at the Argentinian team, a lot of those people look German.
They're pretty blonde. Some blue eyes are on that field. Yeah.
Well, isn't Argentina where all the, you know, like a bunch of the former Nazis bailed to when
Brazil too.
It was Germany versus Germany, really, technically.
The boys from Brazil didn't last against Germany, but the Argentinians maybe.
The slightly more tan Germans.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air this evening. It looks like the network cable keeps going from plugged to unplugged on the computer again, but the Wi-Fi is staying up this time. So how interesting.
And I don't think it's happening here because Peter hadn't been dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've even been talking and stuff.
Although his dogs don't seem to be able to connect.
That's the cable into my brain.
Are we checking to see if the phone's even working? Does it work?
No. From the software, it's not. What if you press the buttons?
What does this button do?
Ha-ha!
So the software doesn't appear to be working, but...
Well, yeah, but the phone should still light up,
phone,
right?
Yeah, but the phones appear to be working.
We wanted to pretend there for a little bit that it was really the phone's fault and not the lack of phone calls. But
it's kind of the phone's fault.
Is
I'm guessing it's because the sun's still out, maybe. People are, you know, staying out, having, I don't know, ice cream and watermelon or something.
I'm just dialing to see if it's going to light up. Yep, it does.
I don't have it on this side.
But it lights up on the little display on the board.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, weird. So that's the software is all horked. That's all right. We don't care.
I care.
You know... We've got the XP. Think about how long XP got supported by Microsoft. Apparently, they're getting ahead of the game now, and they've announced that I think it's next year,
January 1st,
that Windows 7 goes
really
support, but goes, it's not extended or premier support. It's just like mainstream support. Like they're not going to put out any more feature updates or anything. They'll continue patching it, I guess, for security vulnerabilities, but they're going to stop development. Although I don't think that means IE, because IE has been disconnected from that the OS layer.
No, they want to make sure that people, web developers, still have to code for old versions of IE. They will not let that die. I bet they're still cranking out versions of IE 6 somewhere.
Ouch.
But yeah, I heard that today too, and I was somewhat surprised.
It's so early compared to, you know, these others, but I'm sure part of it is by starting at that level, then by the time the premiere goes away, I think they're hoping for the effect they got in reverse with XP, because it seemed like a lot of people upgraded to XP. They got new computers at home and then helped push XP to grow more in the corporate world because they'd already bought it at home and were already using it.
And the way you do that is you get, you know, you put out a really bad operating system, like, you know, me or like, you know, like every other one, and people move off it really quickly. But it seems like the pendulum's swinging a little bit too far on them pulling, you know, the plug on this versus, you know, I know they left XP out there for quite a while, but this seems prematurely short.
And it seems, well, and it's not like people are like, you know, going or cheering and clamoring to go to Windows 8. Mm-hmm. Although part of it, I think part of it is just that the stuff works, and so it's not like it doesn't change that dramatically. And when you've got it and you're using it, it pretty much does what you want. So it's hard to – people don't bitch too much about it, but they also don't, like, rave about it either.
Well, you know, a lot of the complaints I get about the change in the operating systems is people complain that why are they taking something that they're used to and it works for them and changing it so dramatically. And it kind of makes sense that sometimes it does seem like they're just changing things to just change them. It's not adding functionality. They're changing the way you interact with it a little bit. But I like Windows 7. I'm pretty happy right there. That seems to be the sweet spot for operating systems. I was happily skipped Windows Vista and we're holding off on Windows 8 just because, well, it's Windows 8. So... But I would like to see, something kind of give rebirth to the Windows 7 kind of interface, get rid of the tiles and something as an option. All right, well, it looks like we managed to inspire some people to call in. Of course, if they do, you said that they're not going to end, like, corporate support inflicted for Windows 7, that enterprise support staying in place? Would it be a, because once they announced the lack of support for XP, we shut it down. We started shutting down all the XP machines since there's no more updates.
I think it's just features and stuff. I think general like security updates and stuff are supposed to continue
long-term
through
support.
2020 or something.
Hmm.
Actually, I think somebody on IRC mentioned it.
All right, Groove House.
Yeah, they said 2020 for security updates.
2023 for Windows 8. So it says PC guy.
They may be trying to kill their products a little sooner so that they don't get
that's what it feels 20, like.
20 years of XP again.
It's not going to be any good. It's going to be Windows 9. Buy it this afternoon because it's EOL in tomorrow.
They're going to become the hipster OS.
I'm running Windows 3.1, man.
All right, Groovehouse, I see you got some people in the queue, so...
Yes, we do.
Let's go to that and see what we have.
All right, first up on the show, we are going to speak with Carl.
Carl, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hello, Jay and everybody else.
Hello.
I'm looking at buying a tablet, and I like to go ahead and stick with Macintosh, Apple, but I'm wondering, but I don't have an Apple right now. Just wondering what the pros and cons of... sticking with the iPad or breaking out over to a Samsung.
So you haven't had either so far. Do you have a smartphone right now?
Yes, I have an iPhone, yeah.
Well, the nice thing about the iPad is that it will kind of dovetail and with your iPhone, so your apps and things and all your contacts and all that will stay pretty much the same because they will sync together. And they work well together. So there's benefit. Do you like the iPhone?
Yeah, it's just a small screen, you know?
All right, so if you get an iPad, it's an iPhone with a big screen and no ability to make phone calls unless you
Well, although some of that stuff, you know, one of the things that also, you know, basically on both sides, if you already were into Android, then it pushes you towards getting more Android gear. You know, this fall... Apple's coming out with new operating systems for both the iPad and for the Mac, and they're going to do a lot more, they call it continuity, so that you start something on your iPhone, you start an email on your iPhone, and you can finish it on your iPad or on a Mac computer that's hooked up to it. So there's going to be a lot more interaction between the different devices. And actually, I don't remember if it would apply on the iPad, but I know on the Mac, if you have an iPhone and you've got them all updated and all that stuff, that you would be able to make phone calls from your Mac by it utilizing your iPhone to do the call, but you would do it from your computer.
Wow.
So they're trying to build a lot of benefits for you staying in one ecosystem. And Apple's doing it, and so is Google doing the same thing with the Android.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
But, you know, as Pete mentioned, there's a lot of really good reasons to kind of stay in the same, you know, when you have, like, I really enjoy having, like, a Mac computer, having an iPhone, and having an iPad, and having just all of that just integrates really, really well. But if that's not your thing, certainly if you're interested in exploring different operating systems or different systems, having an iPhone for your phone, having an Android tablet so you can get familiar with the Android operating system, maybe that would be a benefit to you. But for me, I'm less about playing around and experimenting and more about having all my stuff work. So I happen to be in the Apple area, but if I was going to, I could easily, you know, change that and be Android on my phone and my tablet, but there's not really an equivalent Android operating system for the desktop.
Are you thinking 10-inch then versus like a 7-inch?
Maybe the medium size. Just seems like a little more portable, huh? But.
Yeah, I used to be a really, I mean, I still am. I carry an Android, so I got the Nexus 7 and was a huge fan of that and thought it was like the best thing ever until at the Geek Gathering I picked up someone's, you know, iPad mini, the 7-inch one, and it was like about half the thickness of the Nexus, even of the new Nexus 7. So, you know, like Jay said, since you already have one, you know, iOS device, you might as well stay in the stable unless price is a big deal.
It's worth considering.
Because, you know, a lot of the apps you can share between, I assume it works like Android. You get something on your iPhone, you can get the same app for the iPad without having to pay again. So,
how's the quality difference between them? You think it's the same?
I think it's very similar. If you get a similarly priced device, you know, with a good processor, it's going to be just fine. I mean, the Android operating system is pretty sound. One of the things that I don't like about Android devices is that on Android, you could have a tablet running a later or older version of Android, depending on who you get.
The way I steer clear on that is I'll always buy the Nexus version of everything, which is usually it only comes out through the Google Store. Although, you know, some like Sprint, I think, and T-Mobile and some actual shops carry them. But if you stick with that, you get what Google wants to be the Android experience. So you get the very vanilla stock version of Android. You get the hardware that they want to be a reference for everyone else. And it's usually just one hardware maker. I think Asus and LG are making the tablets right now, the 7 and the 10, respectively. But it sounds like you might be looking in the Apple camp. But if you do go Android, I would suggest getting one of the Nexus models, just because you will have pure Android and you'll have, you know, kind of what Google wants you to have, which makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. Okay, that's a big help.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, so, yeah, I mean, the unfortunate thing, I think, you know, this was true for me when I started exploring smart mobile devices, is until you actually have one and figure out how it's going to apply to your life, it's hard to make a decision it's hard to make a decision on which way to go because they do things different ways. And
you started off with the Galaxy, right?
I started off life with a Windows phone.
Mm-hmm. Or even before then, probably feature phones, where every time you changed phones, it was an entirely different way of doing everything.
Right.
You know, when there was a year or two when we had menuing on the phones, like the Sony Ericsson stuff. There were, you know, there were smartphones that weren't quite yet Windows phones.
Right, but for myself, the first one that I had, I mean, for my flip phone, I went to a Windows phone.
Oh, okay, so you skipped that awkward generation altogether.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had a Windows phone, and without really knowing much about how smartphones did their business or how I would incorporate that into my life, it was, you know, it ended up being really not useful. Plus, it was early technology, so that wasn't helpful either. But my first real good smartphone was an Android device, but what frustrated me beyond belief was just how different the Android operating system was between different devices. So other people were getting all these new features coming in from a certain update, but Samsung was just saying, you know what, you're going to take what we give you and you're going to like it. And on top of that, your hardware isn't going to work because we don't care. And one of the things that really inspired me to go over to Apple was just because the stuff really just worked and it was consistent. You know, if you bought an iPhone or you bought an iPad, you got the updates. Everybody gets the updates. Everybody can be as current as they care to be with the operating system, and it's the same across all the different platforms.
Just to be on the floor, that's kind of what Google's doing with the Nexus, only what Google's done is they said, hey, anyone can make Android devices. So that's like, you know, if Apple opened up the floodgates and said, hey, anyone can go make an iOS phone, I'm sure you'd have a lot of marginal.
You would, and the same thing that happened with anybody can build a PC and install Windows on it, install whatever they want to on it. That what they call about what people like to refer to as the walled garden of Apple. Some people really don't like that because it's not open, you know, and accessible to just anybody who wants to either make a phone and load their operating system on it, or you know, build apps and install them on there. So some people don't like that idea of that restrictiveness, but other people like it.
It's
because
a pretty garden.
It's a confining, but it's a really nice garden.
Yeah, and actually, you know, so there's no real reason to go beyond the walls.
There's fountains and rock sculptures, and someone comes in and cleans
swans
it up for you every night.
Swans and peacocks. It's just
all the
really
games you
nice.
Could want.
All right, so enough of that. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, that was a great call. Had a great conversation. We got another call in the queue, but we have time and open space for more calls if you want to be on the air with us tonight, because we're about an hour and 15 minutes left in the show. 713-526-KPFT if you would like to join us. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, it's going to be Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thanks, guys. Good evening.
Good evening.
My mom passed away a couple of years ago, and I have her old desktop.
Okay.
It's running Vista Home Pro POS, and I'm trying to figure out a way where I can basically copy the hard drive from there. I want to rebuild the system and give it to my kids.
Okay.
Is there an easy way just to copy that the hard drive over, or would it be safer to go ahead and just pull that hard drive, buy a new one, put it in, and reinstall everything?
That's certainly a good option. I mean, rather than going through all the rigmarole and hassle of trying to clone off that drive and hoping that whatever you have is good, you could just buy a new drive, put it in there, and then get the computer up and running. Is it just that you want to save the data that your mom had?
Yeah, she scanned in thousands of pictures from actual photographs, you know, and slides.
Right. I wouldn't rely on that as the only place to keep those images. I would certainly consider backing those up to a second drive so you have them. They should be relatively easy to find, where you could take an external hard drive, you know, that comes with a USB enclosure, plug it into that computer, and grab those files off that drive and move them onto the USB drive.
Okay, well, I've done that. I have an external terabyte.
Yeah.
And I went ahead and did a backup of the computer. Does that mean that I copied, you know, like hard copies of those?
What you did is, if you used Microsoft Backup, you probably made a backup image of the computer. So if you go and look at that backup, can you actually see the files and the images?
I would have to go inside and check that, but it is hooked up.
So I'm thinking more along the lines of taking all the images, they were all in a folder somewhere.
Right, and just copy and paste.
And just grab that folder and copy it over to another drive. So then you could go and look at that drive in Windows Explorer and look and make sure you have the images.
Right.
If the images are the primary thing that you're concerned about. But for sure, if you don't want to risk losing anything, you can take that drive out of there and preserve it as is, put a new drive in the computer, and then install the operating system and off you go. Assuming that you're good at installing operating systems and there are no weird drivers issues that come up.
Yeah, I've done it in the past. I've rebuilt computers.
Okay.
It's been a few years and I've got, Nuke and Boot. So,
Who makes the computer? What brand is it?
It's HP.
HP. Okay, so you can get all the, as long as you've got a, you know, as long as you've got the network drivers installed, you can go online and get video drivers, sound card drivers, and so forth once you install the operating system.
Right. Okay. All right. So, cool. So I'm looking in the backup files. In the backup I did.
Yeah.
Just wants me to say yes to everything. So when I go into that file, it has a whole bunch of files that say backup file, like 18.
Okay. So yeah, what it's done is the backup has made a backup archive that you can't see, really see the contents of until you restore that backup back. You know, you use Microsoft Backup and you have to go and extract the files you want.
Yeah.
It's a, that's okay. That's an okay way of backing up. It's not my preferred way of backing up. I prefer to have just like a folder with my files in it copied over that I can go and fish out the individual files as I need them. The kind of backup that you've done is more of a, like, everything goes to heck on your desktop and you then you load Microsoft Backup and you restore from that archive file.
Right on. So I should just delete that and just go ahead and...
Well, yeah.
Do both, especially with the terabyte of storage.
Yeah, if you got all the storage, don't worry about deleting that, but get, just, you know, plug in the drive, grab that folder, drag it over onto the drive and drop it there. That'd probably be the best way to go.
Yeah, that's okay, guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have a wonderful night, and thanks for answering my question.
All right, thanks for your call this evening. Bye. All right, so there you go. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We've got about 10 minutes left before the top of the hour, which is about 6 minutes of broadcast time. That's like about 8 minutes of broadcast time, less than 2 minutes it takes to do station business and then come back. We got a Barrett time tonight?
Unfortunately, no. I'm sorry. I came straight from working. I'll get back on it next time.
Well, what about the...
They're going to give me a day off.
Okay, well, we had the... Since we're going to do a Barrett time, we wanted to mention there was... Somebody contacted me.
Oh, there is an ongoing. This is the extension of HAL PC?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We can do that at the top of the hour when we come back.
Okay.
Or we can do it before if you like.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're of HAL PC.
We will. Yeah, we should definitely get the ball rolling. That'll hopefully be a recurring thing. Hopefully they can keep that going and keep those meetings going. And we can talk about this when we come back, but I'm kind of hoping that some splinter groups kind of rise out of the ashes of HAL PC. You know, that there are a few still burning embers out there that may pop up into some user groups or, you know, hopefully something. Hopefully it's not completely dead, just mostly dead.
Well, I know a lot of people are emailing me from HAL PC addresses asking what to do, so they still have a pretty strong user base. All right, well, I see
it
a phone.
It feels happy.
Feels happy?
It feels happy. It wants to go for a walk.
I don't know what you're referencing.
Is it playing music on the site now, or did it change anything on the site?
No. No?
All right, I see the phone ringing, and it's making the software light up.
It's not dead yet.
That's weird.
Oh, gotcha.
I feel happy.
I got better.
Hey, Groove House? Yeah, there it
Different.
Goes. That's weird. So I saw the phone light. It looks like our software actually powered another, so I don't know how that happened. Maybe it just needed a few people to ring in and make that happen.
Needed Flick to cheer it up by saying happy. I was getting it confused with that 24-hour happy song by Pharrell or the dude with the hat. That's what I've been poisoned with. Not the Monty Python.
Not the Python.
Not the Python. Although, has it already happened? Aren't the Pythons getting together to do the live? It already happened?
It already happened.
Did you go or did you watch it?
Did I go? It was in London.
No. I know it was in London, but what they were doing is they were doing a live telecast into a whole bunch of theaters here in the U.S. You could actually go and via satellite link
watch it here as
it unfolded there in the West End in London. It's kind of like they did with the Day of the Doctor when they broadcast Day of the Doctor at the same time, all across the world at the same time.
Wow. All right. Let's see. We have a call in the queue. So, Groove House?
Yes.
Let's have that.
All right. Up next, we are going to kick it with Joe.
Joe, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, man. Hey, a couple questions. Firstly, did any of you guys engage in, like, cryptocurrency mining with, like, your graphics cards or maybe some ASICs? Or do you do any of that?
I haven't actually done any cryptocurrency mining. I am familiar with cryptocurrency.
We've talked about it on the show a couple of times, and some callers have had called in, but we've never done anything other than just never any dedicated software
or hardware
with ASIC.
I have some Dogecoin.
You do?
Hey, hang on to it, man. Never know.
I've got some FPGAs, but I've never really turned them into cranking up bitcoins.
Yeah. Those days are waning, man. I was just lamenting the fact that, like, all these new algorithms and scripts is just trending downwards, and it just seems like there's very little future in it, but. Man, every day somebody's popping up with a new $10,000 rig. I just wonder where it'll end, you know?
Well, there's going to be a tale where once you can no longer get a return on those really expensive rigs, there'll still be enough momentum of people thinking they can to where they'll still be for sale even when you're not being able to get that. I know that, you know, there have been a few Kickstarter, you know, the Kickstarters that have, you know, popped up and said, hey, we're going to deliver this, you know, it's going to churn out this many units, it's going to run on this kind of power, and they charged a bunch of money and they didn't deliver, and now they're being sued just even for delivering a few days late, because in that world it's so competitive that if you wait 2 weeks on hardware, suddenly you're not getting the same return because someone's built something faster.
It's like the it's like the day traders
exactly.
the 1990s.
Yeah. Or even what's going on right now with the micro trades or with, you know, computer-aided trading where it's algorithmic trading and everyone's trying to get and have a position in the market unless you're making trades within microseconds.
That was, I forgot the company.
You read Flash Boys, didn't you?
No, no. What's this? Oh, Malcolm Gladwell? I haven't. Was that The Tipping Point? That's Flash
Boys. That's a good one.
Yeah, no, I've heard of it. But
yeah, and I know there was a company, because the stock exchange people, they wanted as direct lines as possible, and there was an old line that had followed rail lines that went from New York to Chicago, I guess. But somebody else was in the I don't think they're done yet. They were in the process of setting up microwave repeaters to get a more direct line so that hopefully they could shave the time between them by like a few milliseconds, which would give somebody an edge that would use their lines instead of the others.
Yeah, you don't have to be fast. You have to be faster than everybody else to be able to gain a position, and it's insane the amount of time it comes down to.
Interesting. Well, I'm always, man, I always listen to your show, and I'm always, man, scouring the earth for leads on how to
get rich
to,
quick,
continue mining and generating a positive cash flow. You know, if you hear anything, definitely share. I'm listening all the time.
All right. Well, the problem is that, you know, a lot of this stuff as it's happening or gets kind of bubbles up to the surface and starts to seem legit. That's when it's too late to get in.
It's a pyramid scheme, and by the time you've heard of it, you're already too late. You're making other people richer.
You missed the pump, and you're ready to catch the dump.
That's a different website.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
Quick question, man. Is Hal PC still open, man? And can I easily, if I need, like, VBA for work, you know?
No, you know, they're shutting down. But, you know, you can probably go get for the fire sale.
Go search Lycos for it.
All right. Sorry. That's all right. Okay, well, that music in the background tells me it's time to take a short break. All the phone lines are open right now, so the second half of the show needs your support. If you want to call in and be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738 is the number to call to be with us, to be on the air, talk tech, ask your questions, whatever you got. Hour of Technology Bites, it'll be open and available to you. But we're going to go away right now and do some station business. So we'll be back after these messages. You are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Pete Views.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Roofhouse.
And he's
Roofhouse.
And he's
Roofhouse.
Trabaja duro por su dinero y cuando usted invierte es natural que tenga ciertas demandas. Usted quiere asegurarse que su dinero se administre responsablemente y espere ver lo que invirtió crezca algo que traerá beneficios en lo largo para usted y su familia. Invirtiendo en KPFT le regresa cada vez que escucha. No importa si es por la música o noticias o por la información de lo que pase aquí en el Costo del Golfo. KPFT ha estado transmitiendo desde el 1970 y ha crecido muy cerca a la comunidad que sirve. Por favor, renueve su membresía o haga su primer contribución ahora con una llamada que solo toma 2 minutos. Llame a 713-526-4000, extensión 314, o puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org. Muchísimas gracias. Esto es KPFT Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, not too much. No Barrett time. But I am finding the
story.
I sure am.
So the oatmeal, just, I don't know if this is new or not. I hadn't seen it before. But the oatmeal, which is a great internet comic while Barrett searches for this, has how to fix any computer. This is going to replace our show here. Windows, step one, reboot. Did that fix it? No. Proceed to step two. Step two, format hard drive, reinstall Windows. Lose all your files, quietly weep. Apple, take it to an Apple store. Did that fix it? No. Proceed to step two, buy a new Mac. Overdraw your account, quietly weep. Linux, step one, learn to code in C++. Recompile the kernel. Build your own microprocessor out of spare silicon you had lying around. Recompile the kernel again. Switch distros. Recompile the kernel again, but this time using a CPU powered by refracted light from Saturn. Grow a giant beard. Blame Sun Microsystems. Turn your bedroom into a server closet and spend 10 years falling asleep to the sound of whirring fans. Switch distros again. Abandon all hygiene. Write a regular expression that would make other programmers cry blood. Learn to code in Java. Recompile the kernel again, but this time while wearing your lucky socks. Did that fix it? No. Proceed to step two. Revert back to using Windows or a Mac. Quietly weep.
Yeah, that about gets it. Especially on the Linux side.
Yeah. All right. So did you find the story?
I did. So we've been asked to mention that the BuilderBy, which is Hal's biggest special interest group, or SIG, they're still going to be meeting Wednesdays at 1 p.m. in the Fellowship Hall at the Fairhaven UMC. I'm guessing that's United Methodist Church, which is located, that looks like, on the west side of town. That's 1330 Gessner at the corner of Gessner and Long Point. They would love to have more attendees. There are no dues, and they actually have their own website, buildorbuy.org, for more information. If you like building your own machines or doing like the old screwdriver shop or getting everything off the web, you know, or Frankensteining your machines together, this is the group where you can go and meet and see what other people are doing. And, you know, it's a neat kind of thing. Not many people, except, I guess, really for gamers, are building their own machines. And these guys are keeping it alive in Houston. So buildorbuy.org.
Although I'm not sure how they justify Wednesdays from 1 o'clock until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Build or buy or go to work.
Yeah.
if you're of the buy camp, you're probably at your job. And if you're of the build your own, you're probably at the SIG. So I'm not really sure.
Most other people, when they're building computers, everyone else is buying lunch right around then. So we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. But at least with the website, that's like a good place, aside from us, where you can go and, you know, float other ideas or say, hey, I've got this main board, this RAM, this whatever. How are other people doing with it? I would assume it's something like that.
I'd go, but I'm working, so.
Yeah, that is kind of a weird time. Although they should have it Wednesday night. Then we could all go.
Yeah. I could have everybody call in here. We could instruct them. All right. Well, I see somebody's called in, so that's awesome. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We're happy to take your call here on Technology Bites, Houston's longest. Oh, this is our anniversary month, by the way.
Send us gifts.
Yay.
Your gift, your call is your gift.
Send Jay gifts.
19 years of
Send
Technology
KPFT
Bites.
Send KPFT a tip in the tip jar for Technology Bites.
But yeah, 19 years we've been doing this, and God only knows why. All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to kick it off with Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, yeah, I've got a question. We keep having trouble with fax over VoIP lines. Is there anything I can do to make that more stable situation? I mean, please don't ask me why they're still using a fax, but...
Who's your VoIP? Who's your VoIP provider?
Oh, Consolidated.
Do you guys have a PBX or VoIP server there on site, or is this like a cloud-based VoIP service?
No, there's a PBX on site.
And you have access to it? I'm not familiar with that one.
Yes, I do have access to it, and I'm not familiar with
that
either.
Can you see the stream, like the bit stream? Like you can go, I think, anywhere from like 8 kilohertz to 64 kilohertz to 128 and keep ramping up the voice quality?
Really?
I don't know if on your system, like we run Cisco, so we can go into our Cisco and we can say, you know, like we can do quality of service and we can say, okay, I'd like, you know, the voice quality to be this quality and let's up it up to this. And we've got like two streams with Cisco. There's an outbound stream and an inbound stream and you put both of them together and you've got the conversation. So what we found is on our modem lines that if you crank that down like 8 kilohertz, to get that compressed and to save, you know, the space in the stream, it'll actually drop out a lot of the things that humans can't hear, but that, you know, modems can hear. So that is what's going on. So if you've got control over it, if you can bump it up as high as you can, and it's usually measured in like kilohertz or in, you know, in bitstream, like it looks a lot like MP3 stuff you'd see equated with an MP3 player. Bump that up, give that a shot. But a lot of them, it won't work. And that's why a lot of people, we still bring in POTS lines or like plain old telephone system or copper pairs for the fax machine, just because even with like the high dollar Cisco equipment, it's still problematic every once in a while.
Yeah, and that was my suggestion is to bring in a hard line, you know, a regular hard line.
They're pretty cheap. You can get cheap stuff out there, especially if you shop around, and you don't even necessarily have to go through like AT&T and all the other ones. There are a lot of other companies that will drop old school fax lines for, you know, not too much, you know, two figures a month at your office or wherever you go.
Are they sending faxes or simply receiving them?
They're doing both, and we have more problems with sending and receiving.
There's something else you can do. I mean, rather than have to get lines and do everything like that, there are a number of e-fax services out there where to send a fax, all you do is, you know, they've got like printer drivers, or even easier, you just send it to an email. And in the subject line, you know, some of them work. You put the fax number you want to go to in the subject line, and it sends it out from there. And then they'll give you an actual fax number, and people fax stuff to that number. And it's, you know, it's full on. It works. They've tested it. And then you can set up an inbox, and then you get, you know, emails, or you can go to a website and pick up all the inbound faxes. And
the only problem is that, you know, whether or not they are actually faxing stuff that doesn't exist digitally, so then you have to be able to scan that in.
I follow you.
But if it's all stuff that's digital, then you can use a web-based fax service.
Unfortunately, a lot of it is hard copy, and it has to be...
Right.
So,
I would look into a POTS line, just calling your local telco and just ask for, you know, normal copper line and see how to go from there.
I'm going to give them a couple of these, you know, a couple of options and talk to them about that. I'm going to first name base with a consolidated Derek, so I'm going to see if, you know, if he has that ability to get into there and
make sure, just because no one pays attention anymore with cell phones, make sure you look at your long distance rates, especially, I don't know what your fax situation is going to be. If it's all going to be in Texas, it's one thing. But if it's going to be a lot of long distance faxing, make sure they don't get you with, like, you know, unreasonable long distance rates on that.
I appreciate that.
All right.
I want to know where he went to school at. Because when I went to school, if you said the word flicked, it was a serious, like, you were in trouble. You're not allowed to say that word.
Really?
It was recently junior high. That's very, very true.
What year?
Early to mid-80s, like 82 to 84.
Can you use it in a sentence over the radio, carefully?
Did you see that girl? Did you see what that girl was wearing? Ooh, that was flicked.
Whoa, so flicked means hot. Yeah, what's up, flicked? You're looking pretty flicked today.
Don't use flicked to pick up chicks.
Yeah.
I always use flicked to pick up chicks, though. Okay.
No, I hadn't heard of that, but...
I mean, I don't know why they thought it was a big deal to make a speech.
It must have been very regional to that.
Yeah, where was that?
That was Missouri City Junior High.
Where?
Missouri City?
Yeah, Missouri City, yeah.
Oh.
No, Stafford area, right around there.
I grew up in Central Texas, hours from here. I'd never heard that word before.
We're going to go to Missouri City.
The only time I ever heard that word, the first time I ever heard it, was around the time I picked my name, because I was using a different name, and everybody kept mispronouncing it, and it was frustrating me, and so I decided to pick a name that was even more unpronounceable, but that nobody else had ever picked as a nick in the history of the universe. So it was actually a word that had become popular in like urban rap culture at that point in time. It lasted about 6 months, and then it disappeared like a lot of those things do. But yeah, in that context, afflicted was short for afflicted, which meant something was, yeah, really messed up or just disgusting.
Right, kind of like another term is ratchet, which refers to something that's wretched. So.
Oh, yeah, the ratchet. Oh, yeah. Ratchet. That's a new one, yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
Although that might not have come out of Mo City like afflicted did.
No. I don't know if it came out of Mo City. It's one of those things like the Legend of the Smurf Gang, you know.
I actually, and I don't know if this is true. I just read something recently that said that Ratchet came out of like gay cross-dressing culture or something.
It could very well be because a lot of that stuff like twerking. That comes from gay cross-dressing culture in New Orleans, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Big that's Frida, Frieda.
Yeah.
Him, yeah. I've seen him or her before.
You know,
good show.
I would know too much.
All right, well, you guys have a good time. Appreciate the pointers. I'll see what I can do with herding the cats at work into the corral and getting them to get online with this.
All right. Well, appreciate your call. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right. 713-526-573. Why, you just knew the answer to that question, Barrett. I'm impressed.
Oh, we've been doing fax machines. We're kind of split. We do out because we have so many attorneys that we, you know, they fax us stuff. We got to fax stuff out in bills, and it's insane how many faxes we have. So we've been trying to do a lot of it, the fax services, but even then it's still kind of expensive because we have so many, you know, and then you got to write like Flick, we do mail rules to handle it and sort it, make sure it goes to the right person. And, you know, email, you don't necessarily get the return receipts like the fax machine. You kind of know that it comes through. They know it went through. So we're in that weird, awkward stage of 50-50.
We're dealing with fax as well, but fortunately, I do not work with that stuff in that area, so I've never had to actually try to help make faxing work.
Yeah, and see, we've only got like, I think, 12 POTS lines. We've got a lot of, you know, digital lines over PRI, but we've only got, like, you know, we've got a few PRIs, but we've only got, like, hitting 12 digital lines. We've got, like, postage machines that have to dial out and get new postage. And then, you know, we've got fax machines. I mean, it's to the point now where we're getting so many faxes, we're like, all right, let's unplug this fax machine real quick, recharge the postage machines, and then plug all the fax lines back in.
So you've got a couple of old DivX boxes that need to be able to dial in to be able to play the videos.
I've got one more watch on this.
Well, you know, even as fancy as voice over IP, you know, which is what VoIP stands for those that don't know, voice over IP, phone lines delivered via data connections normally you would get your internet from, they're still not the most reliable systems. And when something, you know, mm-hmm. even at my, we're building out new offices where I work, and we're moving in fact this weekend, and we've still got, you know, we got VoIP system for all of our phones, and we're still putting down copper wire for fax machines.
Yeah.
And
fax over VoIP is
and conference bridges.
And that's the whole thing. You've got the IP part, you know, so you're sending packets, and the thing with voice, and especially, you know, when you're sending modem data, you know, you're modulating, demodulating analog stuff and digital stuff, you send it over, and if you're having to convert it over, you start losing a whole bunch of data. So it's just no good.
So, you know, if faxing's still real for lot of people.
I was going to say, your fax of the face of Jesus turns into the monkey Jesus.
I fixed it.
That is one nice thing about the e-fax services is you don't get as many, you know, like menus, and you don't get as many just like the fax member, like, hey, tickets to this sporting event, or hey, have you thought about your faith lately, or, you know, just all kinds of stuff that used to come through.
Or the fax I used to always see was, I don't know why this got passed around, was the one that was the drawing of the stork or whatever that was swallowing the frog, with the frog, like, has its arms around the stork's neck so it can't swallow it, and it says, never give up. For some reason, I saw that get faxed a lot.
Yeah, I'm so short on sleep. My point before was that the whole modem and the faxing and the digital thing, it's like you're going from analog to digital to analog to digital to analog to digital. And even though, you know, it's should get it right, it's like going to Google Translate and going English, German, English, German, English, German. And, you know, every once in a while you get a little bit of noise in there, and a little piece of noise will totally destroy fax. So that's why we usually stay. Even though we've got nice gear, we've got fast lines, we still bring in copper for fax.
Like, so what? So what about Ratchet?
That sounds kind of basic.
Do you use that a lot?
No. Unless I need to, like, a spanner. or I'm working in the garage. Because sometimes I'll dress pretty, you know, kind of questionably in the garage.
So yeah,
dress
the first time I heard Ratchet was like maybe 6 months ago. I don't know, maybe a little longer than that. And I just thought that the person who I heard it from, who was pretty young, like junior high age, I thought they just misunderstood. Somebody said wretched, and they misunderstood it, because a ratchet's something else. That didn't make sense in the context of that sentence. And then later on I found out, no, like all the kids now are using this term ratchet to mean wretched.
I get most of my info from memes. That, and if you can find videos, like it seems like, you know, 13-year-old gay males are at the height of internet culture. They know all the terms first. They know everything first. They knew how to twerk right after people in New Orleans knew.
So you get all the information from 13-year-old gay males.
Yeah, you've got to be really careful on those search terms. And you can't do it in person.
Don't do it at work.
Yeah.
713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air. All of our lines are open. We're happy to talk amongst ourselves, but it's always better when you join in and participate. Get some good, you know, some good thought-provoking calls now and again. And it's always good to have that input from our listeners to propel this show, because that's what this is all about. Just, you know, interacting with the community and trying to, you know, have an ongoing dialogue about technology. Who would have thought that we'd be talking fax machines in 2014? I guess there's still some need to get that hard copy that originates.
There's a lot of hard copy legal and medical stuff that
invoices signed. Still, like
there's a lot of in medical, and I'm sure in legal as well. It's just a lot of it's that the government regulations and the legal system doesn't keep up with times, and so even though a lot of them lawyers and doctors and lawyers' offices, they can do email. But from a legal perspective, it's not considered legal, or it's a gray area still. And so what they know for sure is that they can do fax, and that's considered safer because it's more difficult for somebody to intercept it, because it goes to one number and it's not stored somewhere on a system that somebody can grab and steal the data. And so there's still a lot of use of fax, which infuriates a lot of customers who just say, can you email this to me?
For all
no,
you younger
tell
listeners,
me your fax number and I'll fax it to you.
For you younger listeners, what a fax is an 8-bit PDF.
So my wife was telling me a story about her job. They were going through, the office has been there for a number of years, so they were going through some storage closets, and she found a box of carbon paper. And so she works with a lot of millennials, you know, younger people in the office, and she thought it'd be fun to take this box of carbon paper to different people and ask them if they knew what it was and what it was used for. And of course, they didn't.
Starting fires.
So she explained it, and she to hear Cynthia tell the story. This one particular millennial, this one young woman. The light bulb just flashed above her head, and she goes, "That's where we get CC from. Oh. That's carbon copy." Yes, that's the origins. Wow. The origins. You talk about the origins of words, and
the
know,
mystical origins of CC.
Yes, and all the other things. You know, like, that's so.
Or that weird little square thing you click on to save something.
Yeah, because it's a floppy disk.
Oh, this is so. I just hang out for 30 years and I can become like an English historian. And so, like, this is the etymology of this word because everything will be.
Well, the etymology of icons, and the etymology of, of internet abbreviations and NetSpeak, and I'm sure that should be a major. So, you know.
Yeah, so your grandchild's major in college will be the etymology of emojis.
Don't laugh. There'll be an online college offering that as a major or minor soon. Well, I just found this. You know, if you're looking for something interesting to look at, if you do a Google search, or if you go to actually just go to petapixel.com, PETAPIXEL.com.
Be sure and type that correctly.
PETA.
Yeah, don't go to PetoPixel.
The story about four or five down is this guy has taken everyday objects, and he sanded them down by 1 millimeter and did a stop motion video of it. So he's got like this piece of wood, and he's just sanded it down. So it starts to show you this interesting cross section. It's very mesmerizing.
That looks like CG, but very well done CG. It doesn't look quite real. When you get out to the video, you'll
see.
It's
so real, it looks fake, but it's very interesting stop motion where he sanded down these items. So you're getting a cross section of an item, you know, 1 millimeter at a time, and he reverses the flow of the video. And he's got one where he does it to a camera. Oh, it's awesome. So if you Google sanding down objects 1 millimeter, you'll find it.
And he has one in reverse too, right?
Yeah, some of them he's going forward and then back. So there he is sanding down a walnut. Yeah. Wow. Very interesting. Wow. So the internet is full of cool stuff to keep us busy while we're waiting for you to call 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Flicktage just walked out of the room.
Everybody's gone.
He dropped the mic.
Just abdicated. I'm out.
Left everything turned down, so Groovehouse can only just mouth at us.
Maybe he's out pushing the red button.
Who knows what he's doing? He might just, you know, just walked out on us. All right, 713-526-5738. We've got about 40 minutes left in the show tonight, so plenty of time to take some more phone calls if you'd like to be on the air with us. Talk about what you need to talk about technology-wise as we browse the web and look for interesting things. Now, Groovehouse said a caller called in, and the Monty Python Live is going to be at the Main Art Theater on August 6th. They're going to be playing it. It looks like it has also
at
the River Oaks Theater.
So it's in August, though, is when it's coming up.
Yes, but the actual performance has already happened.
Maybe it did 2 weeks ago. I saw Eddie Izzard was in town, and he was saying he was going to go to it the next night. Yeah, I know they did a live simulcast.
It already happened. Because
if you look at Terry Gilliam's Facebook page, there's a great photo, several great photos from the performance. But this is my favorite one, which is the Spanish Inquisition sketch, and he's airborne.
Who is he? I assume he's on wires, or is he just that sprightly in his own age?
I don't know. It says... Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, especially when they are over 70. This is fun. This is us last night at the Monty Python reunion.
Yeah, it's already happened. This is your second chance to see it.
Yeah.
So apparently there were 10 performances. They were simulcasting the last of the 10th, and that happened on July 20th. So, yeah, we missed it.
20th hasn't happened.
Yeah, you're right. So it's coming up. I have no idea what today is.
Today is the 9th.
Okay, yeah, so it's coming up.
So is it an actual live performance that they're going to be doing?
It's a live performance. I think they're doing like a series of 10 performances in London's West End. And then on the very last one, the big farewell, they're going to have like a lot of high-definition camera equipment in. And they will be simulcasting it. So if it happens like at 6 p.m. there, it'll happen, I guess, probably noon on a Wednesday here, whatever July 20th is. But, yeah, Sunday. So it's going to be several theaters that you can go to. So that might be worthwhile. That could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But this is like a replay of it in August.
The August must be, a replay of it.
August is what's happening.
Yeah, that's what
threw me.
Yeah, August is.
It's a replay of it. It's a recording. It'll be a recording.
So if you missed the live one, if they're sold out, you can catch it again in a month.
Right. Across the U.S.
All right,
theaters.
713-526-573. We can always call in with your favorite Monty Python quote.
15,000 theaters across the world.
Across the world.
Yeah, 15,000 all at once.
All at the same time? Probably not.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, all at the same time.
Real.
How are they going to put that on film and get it to all those places?
Live broadcast, so digital theaters.
Some theaters are playing it at 3 o'clock in the morning?
No, but it's a theater. Oh, theaters show film.
Not all of them, I think. I get you. But no, they've done this before.
Oh, flicked it.
Day of the Doctor.
No, I'm joking.
I thought it was pronounced
theater. Because a lot of them have flipped to, using digital cameras.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller theaters can't keep up because they're not putting... movies out on celluloid, so theaters that are equipped with film projectors can't show current releases, so they struggle that way because they can't invest in the infrastructure that it takes to broadcast or to project digitally. So it's tough. So with internet screens, I mean, home theater and Oculus Rift, who needs to go to the theater anymore? All right, so the phone lines are very quiet tonight. That's disappointing, but you know, we could change that. If you have something that you need to get on your, off your chest, or you got a question you need answered, we've got geeks standing by at 713-526-5738. You could be on the air with Technology Bites. Otherwise, we're going to have Pete's
hard drive
sing a song. Is it Pete's hard drive
back?
I think
that's Pete's hard drive
again.
I don't think so.
Well, it's not.
Yeah, it's something in sent. No? It's gone now.
I didn't drop it yet.
Drop it like it's hot.
No, the hard drive is turned off for the show.
It's something from your side,
it's
though.
AC.
Is it? I randomly hum.
I was thinking that if nobody comes to call in, Pete was going to sing an aria from one of his favorite operas or something. Or not. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Technology Bites.
Or maybe he would sing a song selection from the hit Disney movie Frozen.
Okay, has anybody seen that?
No.
Yeah, about 20,000 times.
Oh, you're on kids, though. That's yeah. Why. Yeah.
The first time, was it any good?
I actually thought it was pretty good.
It seems to be getting a lot of rave reviews.
I only saw the middle of it the first time. Well, probably the first five times. I only saw, like, the middle of it or the very end of it. So it wasn't until the sixth or seventh time, I think, that I actually saw it in its entirety.
Do you own the DVD or are you renting it every
time? I do not, but...
Uh-huh. You do not.
Have you memorized it? Could you type out the script and recreate the DVD?
I could give you a decent plot description.
Have you seen the videos that have sprung up of couples singing whatever, there's a popular song, and so the people have been pantomiming this song and videotaping themselves doing it? And there's a...
Is it the Do You Want to Build a Snowman song, or is it the...
It's sung between a man and a woman.
That's actually funny.
But there's several YouTube videos of that running around. There's one that's done by two guys, and they're twins. And it's... I can't remember
what... We like to finish each other's sandwiches.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say.
The twins actually made that even funnier. I haven't seen the actual movie or anything. What's the name of that song, did you say? Do you know? You don't know. All right, Groovehouse is screening a call. I'm going to see if I can find one here.
Yeah, it looks like the Monty Python simulcast is going to be at the River Oaks 3. So fairly close there in Houston.
Okay. But none of us will be here for that.
Yeah.
So we don't get to play.
Well, the 20th, July 20th. The first one's going to be here in Houston.
Oh, really?
So there's two of them. So the live simulcast, the live one coming from the O2 Theater in London will be on the 20th. So what day of the week is that?
Wednesday.
Is it really?
I'm just kidding. July 20th is a Sunday.
Okay, so that actually could be doable for us if we wanted to go.
Could be.
Or if anyone else out there wanted to go with us.
All right, so Groovehouse is screening a call to be on the air. Oh, wow. Interesting topic, looks like. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do you have for us?
Up next, we're going to speak with Ephraim.
Ephraim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thank you, guys. Y'all are geeks, man. I'm not that much savvy. I've only been texting for 2 years. In my iHeartRadio app, I've put in some stations and so forth, and now there's some that I want to delete, but I've looked all over, and I don't know where to delete your station favorite. How do I do it?
Wow, I don't know. I haven't loaded that application.
I don't use iHeartRadio.
Do you're using it on? You said Android or on iPhone?
On iPhone.
No. So how much effort? I want to help you with this because it's so nice of you to call us, but I don't use. It says, I found it. Here it is. Deleting a station on iPhone and iPod. Similar to deleting an app, you can delete a favorite preset by holding the station's icon until it starts to jump or wiggle.
Okay. All right.
And then tap the X and it'll go away.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's simple enough, guys. I really appreciate that.
No, appreciate the call. Thanks.
Okay, y'all keep it up, man.
All right. Bye.
This is something that happened to me that's related
to iHeartRadio?
Simply because it's a music service.
Okay.
So I got a Pandora account fairly early on, but over time I added other devices that
could stream Pandora, like I had a Blu-ray player or something, and an Apple TV, and then my iPhone, and I forgot what happened. I think I had iPhone. Oh, I know what. I bought an iPhone, but then I wanted the larger size, so I returned it within the return period and got the next larger size. Well, then later on, I was going to use Pandora, and all of a sudden, like these bands that I don't like Nickelback, like their station would show up in my list, like Nickelback and Steely Dan, and like just these bands I just really didn't like, Bon Jovi, the Bon Jovi channel. I'm like, what in the world? And so I would go delete them, and then they'd be gone. And then within a week or two, most of them would pop up again, and some different ones. This happened a few times, so finally I contacted Pandora and I support, and I told them, and it turned out that the iPhone that I had bought, that I'd used for a week or whatever,
the
and then
Nickelback
returned and
iPhone.
Well, it turns out evidently that Pandora was tying my Pandora account to the EID or something, the device ID of that phone, and so when somebody else bought it.
Who really liked Creed.
Evidently who liked Nickelback and Creed and Bon Jovi and stuff, 80s hair rock bands and stuff. Whenever they would get onto Pandora, it was attached to my Pandora account still. And so Pandora had to go in and delete that ID from my account.
Wow.
Because they kept... Fortunately, they weren't deleting my channels. They were just adding new ones.
Well, that's because they weren't deleting
yeah,
your channels.
That's tough. That for now on, it's like for sale, one used phone to home with good musical taste only.
And so it didn't have anything to do with you not removing your account from the phone or anything? Huh. That just would be horrible to, like, you know, have a phone for a little while and sell it, do whatever, get rid of it, blank it, wipe it out, make it all clean, but... have somehow or another hardware coded to any of your applications that present.
So, fan of questionable 90s rock, or would you rather have it landed like into a 12-year-old's hands and a whole bunch of Katy Perry and all the current?
I would prefer poppy. Katy Perry.
Okay, Katy Perry. What about Bieber? Justin Bieber? Someone into Bieber?
No, okay, that might not be so good. But some Miley Cyrus' stuff I could be okay with. Katy Perry, I'm definitely okay with.
Okay.
You know, Rihanna maybe.
So actually,
I'm not
could
a
have
big
been better.
Rihanna fan though, but some of the kind of poppy modern stuff is all right. No, like boy bands though. I don't want any of that stuff. That pretty much qualifies as the same as all that 80s hair metal and stuff.
We got a call.
All right. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next, we are gonna speak with nobody.
Nobody, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I have two quotes for you from Monty Python.
Okay.
It's only a flesh wound, and I fart in your direction.
Well, appreciate that. Those are two...
generally correct.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye. All right. So
they're both Holy Grail.
Both Holy Grail
both
quotes.
Holy Grail. Yeah, I thought it was in your general direction. Yeah, in the French. General direction, and yeah, and then yeah.
Go away, or I shall taunt you another time.
A second time.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Of course, he's the king. All right,
all right. All right. What about this one? When people pop a nice little Chucky in their mouth, they don't expect to get their cheeks pierced.
Oh, that's the Crunchy Frog skit. Yeah. Yay, go me.
Something surprise, right?
My hovercraft is filled with eels.
Spring, so what's this? Spring surprise. Oh, that's one of our specialities. I forgot. I used to listen to...
Matching Tie and Handkerchief?
It was the album Live at the Hollywood Bowl, maybe? Anyway, so the version of a lot of those skits that I know are from that particular mm-hmm. album. So sometimes when people are doing skits, they're different. Like the ones that are on the Flying Circus are actually different than the ones that I know, like the Dead Parrot sketch. The version of it I know is different than the one that's actually on the Flying Circus TV show.
That's kind
of
like my the way that I interact with the song Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, because I grew up hearing the studio mix version of it, but I saw the movie, The Song Remains the Same, once, and they had the live version, and it had the line, "Does anybody remember laughter?" So I always insert that now whenever I hear the studio version of the song. So kind of the same thing, but not really.
It's a good thing you didn't like just chime out with that all on your own the first time you heard it in public. A little over-enthused.
I wasn't ever quite that enthused. It's only a mental thing for that song. But, yeah. So Crazy Frogs and... God, I just...
Hold on, okay, what about this one? It's tattooed on the back of their neck.
The penguin on the television sketch.
That's the dead bishops on the landing. The dead bishop.
No, there's penguins too, because...
But they may be part of that same one. Like I said...
How do you know he's from the zoo? Perhaps he had a dead... they don't tattoo don't property
one.
Of the... Okay.
Oh, no, this was the dead bishop. He's like, there's another dead bishop on the landing. And he goes, what is he? C of V or... whatever. And he goes, how do you know? He goes, it's tattooed on the back of their neck. That,
okay. More calls.
All right, let's take a call.
All right, then. Up next, we're going to speak with Don.
Don, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jay. How's everybody tonight? I hope you're not too bored up there. I tried to give a phone call here to perk things up a bit. But remember last week, I called right at the end of the show, and I had a question about Windows 8.1 Mail, the accounts in the lower left-hand corner that I couldn't get rid of.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, and I did some research, and, you know, I still have not been able to get a definitive answer, even doing Google searching and research on nobody seems to talk have had that problem, or they don't talk about it. The multiple accounts listed in left-hand corner, being able to edit those accounts and get rid of any one or more of those accounts there. So I just thought maybe I'd get some more input if you had it. If you don't, maybe some more suggestions on where I could find more information on that.
Didn't we tell you to come to the Geek Gathering and we'd look at it?
You know, I should do that. No, you didn't say that? I should do that.
Here's what I would recommend. Here's what I'd ask you to do is I would ask that you grab a screenshot of it. You know how to do a screenshot on your computer?
Yeah, 8.1, I assume it's the same as before.
Alt print screen or print screen, yeah. And then save it to a file, and then email it to me.
Okay, all right.
Let me see what you're talking about exactly, and maybe I could find an answer for that on email.
Yeah, I just dragged myself down to a Geek Gathering, and somebody, one of you guys could figure this out in milliseconds.
I'm sure if I could see it, I could figure it out, but I'm not getting a clear idea on what's going on.
I don't know if you use this mail system consistently enough to worry about these kind of things.
No, I tend to, I guess there's some, I've been doing a little bit more research on the Windows 8 People app, which allows you to manage all your contacts. It'll pull in your contacts from Facebook and all that, and I guess make it available to different applications like your email.
And have you had success doing that with that?
I haven't used it. I've just been researching it because somebody emailed me and asked me about how to get their contacts out of the Windows address book from Windows XP into Windows 8. And I would research.
I had a similar problem, and I was never able to figure that out myself. So.
Export it to a CSV file, and then go to there's a web page for the People app where you can import that CSV file. Then it pushes it down to your computer via the People app via the account that you use to kind of,
wonderful. That's not too complex, is it?
No,
Windows, not. Once again, Microsoft's thought everything, haven't they?
Well, they sure have. They've only got your best interest at heart.
The other question, the second quick question, and you guys have used various forms of Windows over the years. You know, and I was using Vista before I used this 8.1 on this new Toshiba laptop here. But, you know, one thing I've noticed over the years, it's a problem when you boot up. You can do, a cold boot, and the screens are coming up, and you get your desktop, and then sometimes you get your cursor there looking at you, your arrow cursor looking at you, and all of a sudden it gets a mind of its own. And it starts flipping around on the screen, moving all over the screen. You cannot chase it around. You cannot get control of it with the mouse. You can't get control with the touchpad on them. It moves. The only way, and it, by the way, when that's happening, generally speaking, most of the keys on your keyboard are pretty DOA, too. So you can't push anything to make.
It's a laptop?
Yeah, and a laptop, right. The only way you can get out of this thing with this cursor moving across on boot up is to push your start-stop button down and kill the machine and then restart. And maybe the next time it restarts, it'll boot normally and you'll get a normal boot up. But have you ever, and that was on Vista. I experienced it last year when I had a Vista machine. And this happens periodically. It's not something.
I don't think it's software. I think it's probably, with laptops, what'll happen sometimes is they'll get a short in the wrist rest close to the touchpad and it'll send the mouse all over the place. All you have to do is just barely touch the computer and or if they don't have the right drivers, like, especially for Vista, like a lot of people installed Vista on Dell computers, but they didn't install the Dell touchpad software. There's specific software for the touchpad. Mm-hmm. And if you don't install that, then the mouse can go crazy.
Well, presumably the Toshiba I have here now, which is only about 3 months old, you get constant reminders from Toshiba, from their service, online service, to update any kind of drivers if there's new drivers.
Right, but a lot of people that installed Vista on certain computers, they installed Vista on a computer that originally came with XP or something. If it was like a Dell that you're talking about, then I know for a fact that the Windows Vista did not include the specific driver software for the touchpad that the laptop used, so you had to go back to the Dell site and download a specific set of software to make that work.
So you're saying that could be a driver problem just within the computer manufacturer?
It could be.
Yeah. Well, Toshiba's been pretty good about these things over the years, and I've owned a lot of these particular brand laptops, but I've noticed that, very curiously, that problem seems to go from one operating system to another operating system.
Well, if it's operating system to operating system and it's not driver-based, then you're having a hardware issue.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listen, anyway, I appreciate your call and good
luck.
All right,
guys, and I'll try to make a geek gathering with this thing.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. All right. Well, now the calls come fast and furious. What are you looking at, Flixie? You look like you're about to sing.
I was going to get you to sing a song with me.
Okay.
You ready? Emmanuel
Kant was a real pissant who was very rarely stable. I digger was a boozy beggar who could drink you under the table. David Hume could out-consume Schopenhauer and Hegel. And René Descartes was a drunken fart who was just a sloshed slagle. There's nothing suck nature could teach about the raising of the wrist. Socrates himself was permanently pissed. Eon Stuart Field of his own free will. Yeah, okay, I can barely remember.
On half a pint of shandy was particularly ill.
Plato, they say, put away.
Half pint of whiskey every day.
Aristotle
was a burger of a bottle.
Hobbes was fond of his dram.
And René Descartes was a drunken fart. I drink, therefore I am.
Okay.
All right, best Python quote ever so far. All right, Groomhouse, who's up next?
Let's see. It's going to be John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Boy, that was a hard act to follow here. Okay, I've got an XP desktop, a Windows 7 laptop. I do not have an email address on my laptop. Can I put my present email address that's associated with my desktop and add it to my laptop? More than likely, that means that if I get an email to the desktop, it'll also show up on the laptop. Is that correct?
All right. So here's what you have to know about email.
Yes, sir.
Your email comes from the sender and arrives at the mail server of your mail provider.
Think of that as the post office.
Right?
Yes, sir.
So when you connect your computer to your email account, if you are using a client like Outlook or Eudora or Mozilla Thunderbird or whatever, Outlook Express or Windows Live Mail or whatever, that's a client. And what that client does is it connects to that server, checks for your email, and downloads it to your computer. Now, once it's downloaded it to your computer, the client can do one of two things in POP mode. One is it can delete the mail from the server after it's downloaded it, which would cause any other computer that connects to your mailbox not to get those messages. So if it deletes it from the server, if you've got one computer connected to your email and it pulls that mail down and then deletes it, you connect another computer to that mail account, it will not get all those messages.
Now it's on that computer, but it's no longer on the mail server, so no other computers will see it.
So the way that you get around that is you configure the mail client to only delete maybe once a week or after the mail's a week old, so all the computers have an opportunity to download a copy of the mail. Or you tell it not to delete the mail at all, in which case you get in trouble with your mail provider because they want you to clear that mail off.
Yeah, okay. I think once you set up the email, there's a program, I think there's a checkbox to delete from server or something.
Yeah, there's an option in most mail programs to tell it to delete from server.
Yes, sir.
Or to, you know, delete from server after a certain number of days. So I usually go with, you know, if I know that I'm going to be using all the computers at any given time, say during a week, I say delete the mail after it's 7 days old. That gives every computer a chance to download it.
Okay.
The other option is to configure all of your email clients to use IMAP, which would then leave the mail on the server and then delete it when you told any computer to delete it. So if you deleted it from one computer, it would delete it for all computers. So that's another option. But the pop mail for multiple computers, pop is a way to go. Also, just checking your email using a web client is another way to go. I use Gmail, and I just access my email from any computer by going to gmail.com and getting my messages that way.
And Gmail leaves enough space that you don't really have to delete it.
Okay, yeah. Well, right now I'm using att.net, and I'd thought about the Gmail business, but I hadn't really looked into it. Okay, question number two real quick. The laptop, I gave it to my wife for Christmas. We set up the password. You know, the first thing you do, you type in 123 jump or something, and it opens up. How do you bypass that, or how do you get rid of it? Say I didn't want it anymore.
So you don't want a password when you turn the computer on?
Correct.
Well, what operating system?
7. Windows 7.
I will tell you, do a search real quick on bypass Windows 7 password lock, and you'll find instructions. There's a few steps you have to go through, and it's not that hard to do. And there's like about a million white papers on, you know, like here's how you bypass the logon password on a Windows 7 computer.
Okay, because the profile, I guess that's what you call it, is in her name. Now, if I open it up with using the password and then create my profile or me as a user, would that bypass it possibly?
No, it would set up where you'd have to choose which of the users you were going to log. Because when you bypass the login, basically you're just telling Windows to bypass this login screen altogether, and it logs into whatever default account that you tell it to log into.
Okay.
So if you have multiple users set up on the computer and you bypass the login, it's going to go to the default user, and then you're going to have to log out as that user and then log back in under the other user ID.
Okay. I'll do the search on it. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right. Who's up next, Groove House?
Up next, we are going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hello. I have an 8-year-old Dell desktop, and I've decided the poor thing's feeling its age, so I've decided to go down and buy a brand-new laptop, and I'm going to drag this sucker down there and have him transfer all my memory. And I'm wondering, do I need to get back to my email provider and advise them of the new computer? Or
no, you don't have to tell them.
Email automatically.
Well, once you configure your mail client on the new computer to connect to your mail provider, you'll get all of your new email. You'll have any email that's on that server come down to that computer. But if you've got old email that you've downloaded from your provider that you have saved on the old computer, you're going to want to transfer that to the new computer.
All right. And I have a, this fella called about the Toshiba product. They're kind of notorious for their battery problems and hardware problems. So I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think it's a software problem with that particular product. I may be prejudiced. And I have a genie joke.
Okay.
All right, these three Aggies are out fishing, and all of a sudden, of course, they screwed up and left the plug out, and their boat sank. So they're on the life raft out there for like a month, and they're eating raw fish, and they're drinking rainwater, and one of them reaches over and finds this bottle and starts rubbing the seaweed off, and a genie comes out, and the genie says, I am the genie of the bottle, and for freeing me, I will grant you three wishes, but since there are three of you, I will give you one each. So the first Aggie says, well, I miss my mom and my dad, and I miss my dog, and I wish I was home. The genie said, granted, and poof, he was gone. The other Aggie says, well, I miss my girlfriend, and I miss all my buddies, and I want to drive my Mustang again. And the genie says, I wish I was home. And the genie said, poof, granted. The other Aggie looks around, and he's looking over to the left and over to the right. He says, gosh, it's awful lonely out here. I wish they was back.
Ah, ba-dum-dum, thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Was that from The Life of Brian?
Groovehouse, who's up next in the speed round?
Up next, we are going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Jay, this is why did you have a geek gathering on July 4th?
Hello. So you're going to call into this? You don't even come to the geek gatherings anymore, so why did you care?
I'm going to come. I'll be there. I got August marked down, but you won't be there, right?
That's why you're coming, isn't it?
Coast is clear.
All right. I do really have a question.
All right.
I'm using Google Chrome, and if I sign in as me at the office or I come home and I sign in as me at home, shouldn't I pretty much see the same things on the screen? And what I'm alluding to is right below the URL, there's like a ribbon or a line with links that I've put up there that I'm not seeing them at home, but I see them at work.
You have
two different computers?
Yeah, yeah. You have to sign in on both Chrome browsers with the same Google account, whether it's a Gmail account or whatever you're using.
I am.
You have to sign in on both with the same Gmail account or whatever, and then you have to tell both of them that you want to synchronize the bookmarks they have to Gmail, and then at that point, then that device will synchronize it to your Gmail account in the cloud or whatever, however you want to describe it on the net.
And where do I tell it that? Because I've gone into all the settings I can find and done it more than once.
I think over on the right, I'd have to.
There's for Google
on the right,
Chrome.
You click on the.
Those four bars.
You click on the bars.
The three bars.
Yeah, you have to say sign in, and then I think under settings or something somewhere it talks about
what. It talks about advanced sync settings.
If you want to synchronize your stuff.
Advanced sync, yeah.
And it says sync everything.
Sync everything. Yeah. And I've done it over and over again, and I don't get the ones here that I have on my screen there.
Does your company lock down your computers? Because another thing that can happen is, depending on how they control a computer and if you're using something other than a Gmail account, the administrators of that domain can actually control whether you can synchronize.
So let me ask you this, Tom. Is it that do you set up the bookmark or the shortcut or whatever in Chrome on the work computer and it's not showing up at your home computer, or is it?
Correct. That's the direction. Yeah.
Okay. What happens if you set something up on your home computer? Does it show up on your work computer?
I have not tried that.
Well, I'm not sure if the company would be blocking anything like that at the firewall level.
I'm pretty sure they're not, actually. But yeah.
I know a little bit because I've done that. I run Chrome, and I've actually got profiles in Chrome for like three different Google accounts.
Google account.
I have a work Google account. I have two or three personal Google accounts. One's Gmail, and the other ones are other domains. And I actually synchronize bookmarks across all of them separately.
Oh man, really?
Yeah. So I can open a Chrome window at home. And I can log in the profile for my work one, and it has my work-based links
saved.
Yeah, because even on top of that, I'm not getting all my bookmarks. You know, like when I go to bookmarks other, and there's like eight. But at the office, it has my old setup where I've got, you know, I can't even count them all.
You might want to, and I don't know where you go and do this. You might want to make sure that on the computer that's got all the bookmarks, you tell it that you want to synchronize all your local bookmarks to your Google account.
Well, that's a good idea. I guess I keep trying it at home. Maybe I need to do more on that side.
To see it at the very least.
Yeah.
And you might try, on both of them going through the, disconnect your Google account and then reconnect it.
That's what I did over the weekend. But again, I did it at home. I didn't do it there.
Make sure that both of them are connected to the same account. They're both actually connected.
Right.
Because you might have advanced sync settings going on, but if there's a box next to it says disconnect your Google account, which if you're connected, then you don't want to touch that. But if it says connect your Google account, then you want to make sure they're both connected.
Yeah.
To receive the information.
Okay.
All right.
Those are all good suggestions, and I want to leave you with one thing I shouldn't admit on the air. But I was sitting here listening on my phone, not on the radio, and after a while I just forgot I was holding my phone, and I was just like listening to the radio, and I'm thinking, man, I want to get up and get a beer, and I better look for my phone while I'm up, you know. So I started looking around for my phone. Anyway,
where'd it go?
Goodbye. Thanks for the help.
Hope you found the beer. All right. Thanks, bye.
Nice.
All right. So in the speed round, we might be able to get this.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. Groovehouse, who is it?
Let's take Nancy.
Nancy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I think that guy had more than one beer before he lost his phone.
Oh, that's Tom. He's special.
Well, here's the thing. My computer was hacked.
How do you know this?
Because everything disappeared. Everything, all the files I had were blank. Somebody was using one of my credit card numbers out in California, and I'm here in Houston. Unfortunately, I keep a financial spreadsheet on my computer, with which I pay my bills electronically every month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I managed to reinstall the Excel worksheet, and, well, I didn't even bother with all the old emails and such, but I managed to sort of restore it. How do I know that the hacker still doesn't have access to me?
Well, if they have, first of all, I hope you cancel or change all your credit cards and all of that stuff, because if that information is out in the wild, it doesn't matter what you do with your computer.
Well, I never put complete credit card numbers in there. I had Visa 1, Visa 2, Discover 1, Discover 2.
Okay. Well, to make sure your computer is protected from, possible hackers, you want to make sure that you're running a firewall. So either a router that your computer's behind. You also want to run security software to make sure your computer's protected. But a lot of times, I don't know how the hack that you experienced actually happened. It may have been something where it couldn't have been stopped because you clicked on something, and no amount of firewall protection. Unfortunately, this is a great question, but we don't have the time to answer it as fully as I'd like to.
Call back next week if you're listening. Yeah. That is something that'd be fun to talk about.
Yeah, call back earlier next week, and we'll try to dig into it a little more in depth and help you out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't have my... Emmanuel Kant was a real piss-tant who was very stable.
I digger
was a boozy beggar who would drink you.
I'm Bruce. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Bruce.
Thank you.
I'm Sheila.
No, they're all Bruce. Can't we just call you Bruce to keep it simple?
Okay, Bruce.
All right, Bruce.
I'm Bruce.
And he's...
Bruce.
KPFT 90.1 will be hosting its annual yard sale at 419 Lovett Boulevard on Saturday, July 12th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Volunteers and staff will be in KPFT's backyard selling a legion of books, CDs, DVDs, T-shirts, and other goodies. So forget about the heat and come to the sale that can't be beat. It happens at the Little House at 419 Lovett Boulevard on Saturday, July 12th between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. Find us on Twitter and Facebook and keep up to date. When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. KPFT's vehicle donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and the best charitable tax deduction around. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR to help out now. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.